Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. 9:03 is the time, and the temperature, I don't know, about 65 degrees. I rode in on an open car today and wore a sweater. Looked kind of silly walking around on a day like today with a big sweater on, but got to stay nice and warm while you're driving. Let's see, today is the 23rd day of August, and the year is 2018, and I'm going to be speaking with a well-traveled man who is also going to be traveling a lot more. And right off the bat, I got to thank Susan Vistendahl. You know Susan, don't you?
Very well.
All right. Susan hooked us up here so we could chit-chat. And I don't know if I've met you before. Have I, Dr. Timothy Marr?
Well, we've had a handshake before, but we haven't had a chance to visit yet. So
okay.
I'm looking forward to this.
All right. Me too. And of course, Susan is writing a history about the St. Louis Musical Department. And one of the first questions I wanted to ask you was, there's a band director and there's a band conductor, okay? What is the difference between the two? You are a conductor.
That's an interesting question. I think what we get at is if you're a director of bands, that you're in charge of an entire band program, marching band, perhaps the jazz bands in the high school, things along these lines. The role of conductor talks a little bit more specifically about what you do up on the podium. I am conducting the band at this point in time, as opposed to directing the band. When I came down here from the University of Minnesota Duluth, where I had been teaching previously, I was the director of bands there for 10 years. And I got down here and introduced myself in the opening faculty session. I said, I'm the new director of bands. And then Carolyn Jennings, the department chair at the time, pulled me aside later and said, well, you're really not the director of bands here. You're the conductor of the St. Louis band. And that what that means is that I wasn't in charge of everything going on with all the bands at St. Olaf.
Which must have been a relief.
Oh, certainly.
You know, I had Jerry Lantz on.
I listened for a little while, yes.
Okay, and so it's kind of fun here that I've got a symphony conductor, and now I have a band conductor.
Sure.
And let's, for those that don't know, and people like myself, I sometimes ask questions I know the answer to, but I think it's interesting to ask the question because there may be some people that don't know the difference, all right? And I would be one of those perhaps. But what is your description between an orchestra and a band?
A couple of differences that immediately pop to mind. The first would be the use of the string section, the violins, viola, cello, bass. We carry a string bass in the St. Olaf Band. The United States Air Force Band has a couple of cello players in its setup. So it's not that we don't cross over every once in a while, but typically it's that main body of instruments within the ensemble. Strings with the orchestra. For the wind band, it's just the winds and percussion.
Okay.
And
so basically a person, a naive individual like myself, if I don't spot a stringed instrument, I assume it's a band. And if I see strings, I may assume it's an orchestra.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assumption.
How about a guy like Duke Ellington? Would he have like a bass in his orchestra?
Oh, yeah, he's sort of a fascinating composer, a very serious, grounded composer who wrote for full orchestra. Most people just know his jazz repertoire.
Yes.
But and they would have had a string bass in the jazz band. He extended his music making into works for full orchestra.
Well, one of the things that I find, Stan Kenton is another one I think of.
Oh, yeah, I've played a number of his charts in my day.
Are you also a composer?
I'm a composer, and I'm a trombonist. I play God's instrument.
You're a trombonist? Yes. Okay. It seems to me I had a trombonist on most recently. Maybe Jerry was a trombonist.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course then we go to Glenn Miller when mm-hmm. you think of trombones. And how about saxophones? Have you ever heard of a guy named Earl Bostic?
No.
You know, you are about the fifth guy I've spoken to that's musically related. Mm-hmm. And Earl Bostic was a guy I grew up with back in my youth. What you needed was a guitar, drums, and a saxophone.
Sure.
And I think during a break, if I can figure out how this thing works, and I think I can, I'll pull up one and just see what you think of it, all right?
Excellent.
Now, you have been everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And if you just tuned in, folks, Tim is the conductor of the St. Olaf Band, and he has his doctorate degree. Where did you get the doctorate degree?
Down at the University of Iowa.
Iowa?
Mm-hmm.
Are they well known for their program?
It's a very strong program, yes.
Okay. I had a guy on the air that was marcher, or I should say a member of the Michigan band. And they're pretty well revered, aren't they?
Yeah, all the Big Ten schools offer really wonderful programs, yeah.
How about drum and bugle corps?
Well, as a matter of fact, I grew up in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
I know where that is. My first radio job was in Toma, Wisconsin.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and yeah, going to La Crosse was big time.
Well, I can understand that.
Old style.
Yeah, I worked at the G. Heilman Brewery for a couple of summers.
Oh, okay.
We have lots of stories we can talk about. But I marched with the First Federal Blue Stars, what they were known as at that time. And I marched in the very first DCI International competition. And this was 9th and 10th grade for me and formative years. And I learned how to work hard. I learned how to support a big brass sound. I learned what percussion can do to propel sound forward. I learned what, you know, getting a girlfriend is all about. I mean, there are all sorts of things. That
traveling,
I
yep. Yep. I have to say that... goosebumps. When you see a great performance and hear a great performance mm-hmm. by a drum and bugle corps, I'm getting them now thinking about it. But you got to go to the La Crosse High School mm-hmm. and then went to the university. Where did you go?
I went to St. Olaf College.
Oh, that's right. You came over here in about 1978? 74.
Yeah, fall of 74.
Okay, mm-hmm. so you've been around. Mm-hmm. Did you know that we had a drum and bugle corps in this community?
Well, I had heard about this, but I haven't really read any details on it or anything like that. I know that you had a drum corps show here.
Yes.
Over at the radio, the rodeo stands for a while, I guess it was.
I'm just going to, because I know the history, our performances were always at the old football field, Memorial Park, which is by the golf course. Mm. And that's where we
that
had the
captain. Sure.
A woman named Jeannie Snowbrick was the one that put that all together. And we used to have Brass Incorporated mm-hmm. and the Blue Knights and the St. Peter Governors.
Governors, yes.
And we'd have that. And we just couldn't get enough people. The most, I would say 85% of the people in the stands were followers of the competition. Mm-hmm. But, boy, what a great show they put on. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I had the pleasure of announcing it. And I had to have the decorum that you have.
Yes.
Brass Incorporated, are you ready to take the
field? The field of competition.
Yeah. And... hey, I got to ask you this. You've watched the finals, I guess you would call it. Usually mm-hmm. they're like in New Jersey for the national
yep.
competition, and they used to broadcast that on Channel 2, the PBS.
Yes.
Did you ever watch it?
Oh, many times, yeah.
Did you get as frustrated as me when the cameras would go up and do a single of a horn or a single of a drummer, and the whole idea is you got to have the whole scope and visual picture mm-hmm. of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like that? Like, hey, come on, let's see the whole thing, man.
Yeah, yeah. The choreography, to use that term broadly, is as much a part of the presentation as anything that's happening with an individual.
Yeah. Now, how many countries have you been in?
Oh, I'd have to sit and count.
Okay. You name them and I'll count them.
I've been to England and Ireland and Scotland and Wales, if you want to count that, the Welshwood. I've been to Iceland for a stopover, Netherlands, Norway, Germany, Italy, France, Spain, Australia, New Zealand recently, Mexico, Thailand, Singapore. I'm probably for Canada. I'm forgetting a few. Yeah,
that's almost 20.
Yeah, music taking me to all those places as well.
Is that always a pleasure or is it kind of pressure?
Oh, it's mixed. I mean, when I'm traveling just with my family, it's an entirely different kind of a relaxed state. Anybody who's traveling has the normal worries about losing a passport or getting through customs and all that stuff. It's another thing when you're traveling with 90 people in a band. And fortunately, I've got fantastic management with the program up at St. Olaf with Tara Whittefield as the manager of the band. And we usually have a touring company that is taking care of the logistics. And nevertheless, this past January, we were fortunate to be in Australia and New Zealand for a couple of weeks with the band, and you realize we're on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and if something happens, this is going to be a challenge to mm-hmm. Deal with it. And so there's a little bit of responsibility that keeps you on edge.
Did you go in the bathroom and watch the tub drain?
Well, that's the very first thing I did. not really, but...
You know, Jack Thurdenblad, do you remember that name here in Northfield? He was AD at Carleton.
No, I don't know.
The first time I ever heard that, he was giving a speech. He passed away recently. And he said, the first thing I noticed is that when I flushed the toilet, the water swirled a different way. And, okay, that's pretty cool. Dr. Timothy Marr is my guest here this morning. He is the conductor of the St. Olaf Band. Did you travel with your high school group, lacrosse high school? Did you take tours to, like, Washington? No.
I went to La Crosse Central High School, and I had a fantastic teacher there, Bill Baker. He was in his 60s. He was a legend in the town, and he had been there a long time. And he ran a really strong program. He had a couple of unfortunate things happen during his time. When I was a junior and a senior, one year his wife passed away, and the other year he had a heart attack. And both times they looked out into the band and said, who wants to conduct the band? Rather than bring in a sub, they had the choir person come in and just sort of sit in the back and keep the discipline. And I raised my hand and said, I'll do it, because my mom was the church choir director. I had been watching her wave her hands, and I had sort of goofed around and with my stereo on and, thought I could do this. And that's what changed me. I thought I was going to be a doctor. I thought I was going to be going to being a pastor. I was into chemistry. I had all these other interests. And then I found out the magic of, what it feels like to drop a baton and have sound come out.
You know, you remind me of when we had the drum and bugle corps. We were rehearsing, and the director was not available, and he wouldn't be available for the next parade. Mm-hmm. And we needed everybody on instruments because we were small. So we needed somebody to direct it. And I thought, I'll give it a try. And they said, yeah, okay. And the thing that I really liked was when you did the 1, 2, 3, 4, and they'd lift their horns.
Yeah.
And so there I am doing the thing, and all of a sudden I realize this isn't my forte. I mean, I've got rhythm, and I enjoy it, but there's more to it than what it, like you say, I used to direct a symphony when I listened to it in the car.
Sure.
And I anticipate, It's a lot more to it than what we do see.
Oh, I'm hopeful that people will understand that. you hear the results of that. Any conductor worth his or her salt has studied the composer, studied the time period, certainly studied the score, and they've come to an interpretation. They need to teach it to the ensemble. This is a long process, and the audience gets it at the very end.
Yeah, and it's the rehearsal that's all mm-hmm. the work involved, and then of course you got to put on that show. What was the Heritage Band Festival?
Yeah, the Vintage Band Festival.
Yeah, and who's in charge?
That's Paul Nemestow.
Yeah, he's a personality.
Oh, you think? Good morning, Paul.
You know, I actually met him in a place in Northfield that is no longer there. It was called InstiPrints.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wanted to pick up my printed material, and he's talking to Shirley, the owner, mm-hmm. and he kept talking and kept talking, and I'm standing. He's a big man,
yeah.
And I'm kind of like, you know, can you finish your business and let me get my order or whatever I wanted? And anyhow, we ended up talking to each other, and I thought, this guy's got a personality. Wow.
Yeah.
So what is it to you as a man that's been around music all of his life to go to the, especially the big one that they had, two, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Was that like heaven for you to go to all of the various venues?
I have great respect, first of all, I'll say this, for what Paul has done with that festival. It's a rather unique offering nationwide. It brings in, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of income and revenue to the city every time it happens. And the joy that it distributes among the town folk is palpable. I mean, I'm hearing, you know, neighbors and friends talking about going down to Bridge Square and catching the show that was going on and so on. And so this is a fantastic event. Quite often, I'm not around at that time,
oh.
You know, with other travels or, in all honesty, August is a pretty serious month for me to be composing. And that's when I shut off my listening because I'm working as hard as I can to hear my own music. And if I would go to an all day band festival, that would throw me off my writing for days. You know, I'm working on a piece right now, and so I don't listen to anything else.
So, is a composer also an arranger?
In a certain sense, yes. The composer, you're sort of figuring out all the notes, all the rhythms, and everything. If you're an arranger, someone else has already done that, and you're taking their material and reworking it in some fashion.
Is it a dual situation most of the time, or
rarely?
Or?
I started with most of my experience being an arranger. When I was in high school, the old Blood, Sweat, and Tears groups, Chicago
oh,
groups,
yeah,
things
right.
like all these great horn bands were happening back in the 70s. And we wanted to play this music with our jazz band at high school. And so my brother Tom and myself, we would, this was, you know, before cassette recordings. And so you'd drop the needle on the old LP and ruin a record doing
yeah.
this.
Yep.
And you'd listen for a while and you'd go over to the piano and try to figure out what it was. And then you'd write it out for the jazz band.
What do you think of Bruno Mars?
Oh, he's very talented. I can tell this morning is just going to go ping-ponging all over the place.
We're getting to know each other. That's why I like to talk about things like
sure.
that. Then I'm going to get into where were you born and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And like I told you before we started, I don't think with all of your travels, and I like to know what you did in Thailand. Was that a band or was that a family vacation?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you brought a CD upon my request,
mm-hmm.
and I would like you to open the CD set there
sure.
and tell me what... which one you want me to play, which cut you want me to play, and I'll arrange the situation over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, this is from a double CD set that we put together back in 2010. It's called Imagine If You Will, and it's just a whole bunch of my music performed by the St. Olaf Band. I've been, I'm almost up to 90 pieces for band that I've written, and it was... put together with a number of reasons in mind. One is it's a great recruiting tool. We have a number of students who come to school to study composition with myself and with Justin Merritt, my colleague. We're pretty proud of what these students are out doing after they graduate and so on. They're really doing well. And it also is a way of getting the sound of the St. Olaf Band out into high school band rooms and students are playing it and listening to it.
So what we're about to hear is, let's start with the beginning, an idea, and mm-hmm. then putting it on paper, then introducing it to the members of the band, mm-hmm. and it's all yours and St. Olaf's.
Yes, yes. This particular...
Nobody else has heard this before because you wrote it.
It's been around since 1983.
Okay.
And so it's an old piece. It's it's published. It's been performed all around the world, you know, and I'm
that your stuff has been performed all around the world.
Yeah.
With your band or with others?
With other bands. It's gone through four printings. It's a published piece, you know, it's that kind of thing.
And so that means you're making a little money on it.
Well, little. Emphasis on
okay.
little.
Yeah.
But this is a piece that was originally for organ, and it was written for my brother Todd when he got married. It was the recessional to get him out of the church. And I called it a fantasia on Ode to Joy. You know, la-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-da. So I was arranging, in a certain respect, the hymn that you find in the hymnal or the Beethoven ninth. Tune. I mean, they're both, you know, the same thing basically, and not really. I've got musicologists that are mad at me for saying that right now. But then back in 1983, January, Miles Johnson was on sabbatical.
Mighty,
good old Mighty Johnson, and I was down at the University of Iowa doing graduate work at the time in trombone performance, and. He said, why don't you come up and split the January concert? I want to keep the band playing. Joanne Polly, who was the clarinet prof at the time, will take one half of the concert. You'll take the other half of the concert. And I jumped at the chance. You know, I was 5 years out of St. Olaf at the time, and it was a golden opportunity to grow. And so I took this organ piece and made it into a band piece. When I was writing it for organ, I always thought, God, this is going to be a good band piece someday. Percy Grainger, a great composer, used to write at the organ all the time. And if the listeners can understand that if you're writing at the piano, as soon as you hit a piano key, the sound is dying away. It's losing its energy.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit an organ key, it just stays there. The bellows keep the air moving through. And so Percy Grainger would write at the organ because that's sort of what a band does. It keeps that air going through the instruments. And so when I was writing this at the organ, it felt like a band piece. And so Mighty says, why don't you take the band? I said, I'm going to write this piece of music. And I dedicated it to the St. Olaf Band and Miles Johnson. And within a month or so, Mighty called me and said, I suppose I should have asked you first, but I sent your piece into a publisher. And usually that would be the composer's right. And I said, well, that's fine. Which one? And it was Neil Chose Music Company. And they're tied to St. Olaf. Neil Chose Jr. went to St. Olaf. His son, Mark Chose, who's the president of the company now, went to St. Olaf. And they called within a couple of days and offered me a contract. And so within a matter of months, the thing was already in print, and it changed my life. It helped me get my job at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and it helped put me on the map as a composer of band music. And so that's the piece that I thought we'd maybe listen to.
All right, let's hear it. And we are going to do this.
Thank you.
the St. Olaf Band on the Wayne Eddy Affair under the direction of Timothy Marr, Dr. Marr. Wow, I enjoyed that. That was exciting. I have to say the first thing I thought was, if you're using that as exit music at a wedding, mm-hmm. boy, they better be moving. And then I thought, you know, what it is it's exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, like, wow. And I thought of the recent wedding of the prince over in sure. England and the music that they were playing there for their exit. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
A lot of people use that at weddings that you're aware of?
I actually have an arrangement of that for a brass quintet that can make it happen with organ. And it's been used in that fashion a couple of times. Yeah. It's hard to get a full band into a church,
yeah.
you know, to make that happen. But I imagine maybe recordings could be used. It was fun for me to hear that. I haven't listened to that piece for a couple of years.
A couple of years?
Yeah.
Wow. Want me to play it again? Hey, I have to ask you a question here.
Sure.
You have one on here that maybe we can play a little bit later on. And I mentioned it to you. Where is it?
Oh, the Silly Walks and
yeah,
Farewell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the last movement of a four-movement suite called Scenes from a Life Danced. And it's sort of a fun ending to a pretty serious piece. This was a work that I wrote after my niece passed away at the age of 20. She was a dancer over at Lawrence University, and she grew up as a dancer. She was a dancer over there, and this was a piece that actually had some dancers involved with the wind ensemble over at Lawrence when the premiere happened. But she was Katie Marr, and she was a fun-loving, sort of goofy kid. And so to lighten things up a little bit at the end of some rather serious music, Silly Walks, you know. We had some fun.
And I'm going to play a portion of that in a little bit.
Sure.
But right now I have to say, if you want to walk, folks, you can, because they have new flashlight flashers at 3rd Street and Highway 3. So you can cross the street and go to the Quarterback Club, where they have delicious burgers, fantastic baby back barbecued ribs. Of course, they're known for their chicken. But they have a menu that is very extensive. Tuna salad sandwich, egg salad sandwich. How about mashed potatoes and gravy? And, of course, you will always enjoy their fish. They have wonderful codfish. And their breakfasts are well known in the community. And you have exactly, about 26 minutes to get there and have breakfast before they switch over to their luncheon menu. And they are quick. By the time you sit down and relax, they say, here's your food. And it's the Quarterback Club. And remember, please, that it is locally owned and locally managed by Dale Finger here in Northfield, Minnesota, the QB.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on the 95.1 FM and, of course, 1080 AM for 50 years come September 27th. It is August 23rd, the year is 2018, and my guest this morning is Dr. Timothy Marr. Am I saying your last name right?
You are.
And, you know, usually when I give the QB commercial, I'll ask my guest, have you ever been to the Quarterback Club?
Oh, a couple of times, you bet.
You enjoy
Yeah, I mean, I'm launching into my 25th year as a resident of Northfield, you know,
wow.
And so we've been there quite a few times. I just took my father-in-law there for lunch about a month ago or so and
Great.
Enjoyed it.
25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have been in town for 50 years and 5 days, I think. And so you're catching up. Do you feel like a townie yet?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I came here, they didn't count the population of the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a town of like 5,000. And, of course, Division Street was all retail. That, of course, has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great community. I wasn't familiar with it when I came here to see if I wanted to come to work here or at a TV station in Iowa. But I was impressed with the town. It didn't have any stop-and-go lights,
mm-hmm.
no semaphores. And, boy, the things have changed. But if you feel like a townie, what part of town do you live in?
Well, we live on the southeast side of town. And
okay.
when we moved down here from Duluth, my wife Jill and I, and we had our daughter Jenna was just 18 months old at the time. And it was an interesting process trying to find a home that would work well for us and so on. But we were almost conscious in our decision to live on the opposite side of town, so I would have to go through the one stoplight every day and have an urban experience. You know?
Yes, of course. You know, we used to give traffic people, we go, and we, like we were a helicopter, and there's a car over on Highway 3 right now. Look out. But, 23 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, and Doctor, I have to ask you if you liked the music of your teenage years as far as pop is concerned.
Yes and no. There were two things going on at that time. The whole disco thing I was not interested in.
Okay.
The horn bands of the time, some of the heavier rock groups, I appreciated their stuff.
Well, I'm looking at this in some of the songs. The top two songs are... disco, and number three song is was produced right here in Minnesota. Fourth is disco, and anyhow, I was going to do some bumper music.
Thank
we can
God.
Do that later. But you graduated from high school in '74, La Crosse Central,
mm-hmm.
then you came to St. Olaf. And how did you find St. Olaf?
Oh, this was a fluke. I was hanging out with some friends, and they were going to go take a college visit at St. Olaf College. And I had never heard of the place, and I thought, well, this is only a couple hours away from La Crosse. You know, I'll go check it out. And I went along, and this was when the music department was having a centennial of the college celebration.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And they had this massive concert going on with... the orchestra, the band, the choirs down in Skoglund. Skoglund was newer
brand
then,
new,
you know,
yep,
and so on. And I don't know how I got a ticket. They must have had some set aside to recruit kids, you know. And we ended up going to this thing, and it basically blew me out of the water. I heard incredible music making from all the ensembles, and I decided to take another serious look at this place. I'd applied at Northwestern University, Indiana University, some of the really strong music programs. And I didn't get into Northwestern. They've had me come teach there late, you know, after that summer session, but I wasn't good enough to be a student there. Rightly so. I was trying to be a trombone performance major, and that's a really difficult place to do that at. I got accepted at Indiana, and then I got accepted at St. Olaf. And those two... experiences are incredibly different as far as the nurturing of a young person from the age of 18 to 22 to go to a small church-related liberal arts college versus a massive Big Ten university. And I chose wisely, I think. I had so many great things opened up to me when I was a student at St. Olaf, musically and within the academic classrooms. It was life changing. So
I really wish I could appreciate music more. I mean, yes, I can enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
and I can sometimes find out, like in my own interpretation, that that was kind of neat, that was unique, whatever it may be. But I have no idea what chord.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I have no idea about anything. All I know is I like it. And I had a music director here at Kim Radio back in the 70s, I think it was. And he was very into music. He was a musician. And I asked him if drummers read music. and I thought it was
It's a good question.
And he brought me some sheet music for a drummer, and I go, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And the point he made was any music that's done well is good music,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a polka or what you just what we just heard that you conducted. So I envy people like yourself that know what's going on right and know what's going on wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And can appreciate things and teach how to make it right. It's got to be a thrill.
Oh, it's an absolute thrill.
So do they give scholarships for St. Olaf
mm-hmm.
Band?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it similar to athletics, or can't they do athletics? Do you have an advantage?
Division III schools can't give athletic scholarships, as I understand it, and so there might be a little bit of an advantage there. I don't feel that we're competing against each other in recruitment or anything.
No.
In fact, some of the strongest musicians I've had in the band were also members of national champion cross-country teams, for example, and things like this. It's a challenge for them to make involvement in a sport work alongside being involved with one of the music ensembles, because there's only so many things that can happen in any given hour during the afternoon after the academic work is done. And so golf teams and cross-country worked really well, because that's sort of an individual training. They could juggle their schedule a little bit. And,
mm-hmm.
But we have scholarships that we are able to offer at a couple of different levels. Some of our star students that come in are able to basically get about 1 year for free, you know, if they're really playing well. And so that's not a bad deal.
Who makes that decision?
It's a joint decision within the music faculty. We have about 400 students every year audition for scholarships, and we pare it down to maybe 150 to 200 of them.
Well, that's got to be time-consuming.
Yeah, it takes a couple of weekends where they then come to campus, and we interview them and listen to their audition, and hopefully they go home with an offer of a certain level.
What do you think is the most difficult instrument in your band?
Oh, fun question.
While you're thinking about that, we'll take a break.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back on KYMN Radio with Timothy Moore, Dr. Moore. Mark.
Hey, this
Mark,
is Andy.
Mark.
And I'm Dave, reminding you to tune into Northfield Outdoors this Saturday at 11 a.m. on KYMN 95, the one, or catch us online at kymnradio.net.
When we will be talking with Dennis McAdams and Al Heidebrink about the Turn-In Poachers Program, the history of conservation officers, and protecting our wildlife and environment.
Live the legend and throw axes with your friends at the all-new Battle Axe Pub. Visit Magic, the live unicorn, hug a kangaroo, pet an African porcupine, or hand-feed a grape to a ring-tailed lemur. Soar over the crowd at the Wizards Flight School Zipline. Have a blast at the new Bow Blast Competition. The Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Family fun for one and all. Weekends and Labor Day through September 30th. Discount tickets at Super America, Cub, Menards, Dunn Brothers, and online at renaissancefest.com.
Willie's Shoe Repair in Northfield is your shoe and boot repair center. Randy also does leather repair, including bags and briefcases. They sell new boots, belts, and shoe care items. Your shoes and boots will appreciate the quality work at Willie's Shoe Repair.
All right, we're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are KYMN on a beautiful Thursday morning. And we have conductor Dr. Timothy Marr in studio, and I took a break after asking him, what is the most difficult instrument to play in a band like St. Olaf's? And the answer is?
I don't think there's just one. I think there's a number of them that are challenging, and it's primarily because of the construction of the instrument itself. I think the double reeds, the oboe, English horn, and bassoon are challenging to control the pitch on them. Basically, your listener can think of two pieces of cane that are set next to each other and wound up and wrapped together, very similar to your vocal cords in construction, and you put it in their mouth, and they need to be able to control that. The French horn is very challenging because most of the music that it plays happens on very high partials in the overtone series on the horn, and it's easy to hit the wrong one, and so it's hard to be...
Is that a three-valve instrument?
Yeah, that's typically, yeah. And sometimes there's a double horn, so there's another sort of side to the horn with a thumb valve that they can employ. I play God's instrument, trombone. That's the way I look at it.
Of course.
Yes. And that one, I think, is challenging in that it's just this long, continuous slide, and you have to know exactly where to place it so that your intonation is pure. I wouldn't say there's an easy instrument in the band. They all have incredible challenge about them. And when the students are playing at the level that they do up on our campus, they've already put in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours, and they've gotten themselves to the point where they can rather accurately predict what will come out the end of their instrument and control it. And then we stand a chance of...
So what musical talent is necessary for the bass drum or the kettle mm-hmm. drums?
Well, for the kettle drums, the timpani, once again, it's the ear. They need to be tuned to a certain pitch. The composer wants an F concert pitch to come out of the timpani. They have a foot pedal that they typically can control it with. And if you're off by just a little bit, then you're not in tune with the rest of the ensemble, let alone playing in rhythm and having a good technique so that you can draw the best sound out of the instrument. Anybody can go up to a bass drum, the other one you mentioned, and whack it and make it sound. It's the artist on the instrument that knows exactly what kind of glancing blow to use with a certain kind of beater on the drum, and it's physics. A lot of it is physics.
We know that there's I have heard that musicians have their own sense of humor, and that they tease one another. Mm-hmm. And they disrespect an instrument, and it's all done hopefully in good fun. And you must, do you discipline them on that type of a goading, or do you say, yeah, have fun with it, we know that clarinet is this or that?
Oh, sure, you know, what's a viola at the bottom of the ocean? It's a good start, you know. I mean, you know, there are all sorts of jokes along those lines. I think it's a way to perhaps release the pressure
sure.
of the intensity of trying to perform perfectly.
Well, a guy like myself could walk into, let's say, you just got done rehearsing, and everybody feels good because it was a good, tight rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And a guy like me walks in, and I just listen to the back and forth jokes, and I would just go, huh, huh? you just wouldn't get it unless you're a musician.
Yeah, well...
inside jokes.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing could happen if I went in and sat with four plumbers who were talking and having fun with each other after the job of the day.
Yeah.
You know, you either know about what they're talking about or you don't.
Okay. It's 10 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. Dr. Timothy Marr. Where does that come from? Is
it's
that German?
German name, yeah.
Okay, hey, how about that?
Yeah.
I got that. He's going to be leaving the country on a big tour with the St. Olaf Band. When are you leaving and where are you going?
Well, actually, we are just returning from it, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in Australia and New Zealand during January of this 2018. The groups tend to go at St. Olaf every 4 years, once a generation of students is okay. the way we think about that. The choir, St. Olaf Choir and St. Olaf Orchestra are heading to Norway this next year. Orchestra just had a great tour to China. They've been down to Brazil, Uruguay. Our previous tour with the St. Olaf Band, well, there's sort of a funny little roundabout way that this has all worked. We were on a tour in Norway back in 1995, and they said, where do you want to go next? And I said, well, we should go to Japan, because the following for concert bands in Japan is fantastic. You'll give a concert in an hour and a half ahead of time. They will be lined up three blocks outside the door waiting to come in. It's not like that in the United States at all. Every hall was packed. They treated us like rock stars. And somehow the college was able to help us with the financing to make that trip happen. It was during one of our January interims, so that we had the entire band take a class on the arts and culture of Japan. And the first 2 weeks of January, they're in the academic classroom twice a day, and they're in rehearsals twice a day. Very long days.
Wow.
Getting ready to go. And then you get on the plane and you go to Japan, and we presented 6 concerts, and we went and all the stuff that they were studying comes alive in front of them was when they get over there. So it's an incredibly powerful experience. And we did that with Mexico back in 2004, and that's what we did with Australia and New Zealand this past year. They academically prepare themselves for the experience, and it's not just about the music. It's about the totality of the entire 2 weeks.
Well, I'm glad you're saying that, because, you know, it can sound like fun and games. Hey, I'm going to Australia with the band. I'm going to play the clarinet. And, oh, you lucky dog.
And yeah.
You're in Japan. All right. So that is what you would call a form of teaching culture.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had remarkable experiences. With the trip to Mexico, we combined that with an effort that Rich Erickson, our manager at the time, helped put together, where we took in donated instruments, and we had a very small village up in the mountains, third world country experience, very poor. And we made this donation, helped them start a band, and we had that kind of cross-cultural experience. And at the end of that 2 weeks, we were having a large full band meeting, sort of wrapping up the learning that was going on, and we had people standing up and through tears admitting that they never realized how prejudiced they were, how racist they were, until they had a chance to see the joyful humanity of these people that were so different from them. And that really had nothing to do with their clarinet. You know, it had everything to do with what that full experience was.
Where do you get the donated instruments?
Well, we, alumni, friends, town folk, we just put out the various calls and go check your closet. What do you have writing in the house? You know? And we've had, in Northfield here, they've had that same kind of push. We have young boys and girls coming up through the school system who don't have the means to get an instrument. These instruments are in this town. We just need to get them collected and refurbished a little bit. And
yeah,
away
I,
we go.
I went through that about 3 times.
Yeah.
And then you want to make sure your children, grandchildren, learn music as best they can, and they don't want to practice, they don't want to rehearse, they don't want to, you know, and then they want to switch because a friend is playing in another section, and you end up with an instrument in the closet that you paid good money for,
and you
donate it or resell it, whatever, whichever. What is the most popular instrument when high schoolers apply at St. Olaf? What instrument, while you're thinking about that, we'll take a break and come back
Very
and say,
good.
Well, like, we get 25 of these and 3 of those.
Sure.
We'll be right back on KYMN Radio. Stick around. Well, I got to push the right button here, Doctor. There we go.
Hi, I'm Alyssa, director at the Vital Link Adult Day Center on the Three Links campus. Our program is for adults requiring care during the day and includes nutritious home-cooked meals, stimulating group activities, as well as outings to local attractions. Vital Link provides support to caregivers during the day. Transportation is available. Please call me at 664-8865 to schedule a tour or find out more at threelinks.org.
Yep. Hay season is save season at John Deere. For a limited time, enjoy extra savings on select John Deere mower conditioners and round balers. pay a visit to your local John Deere dealer to learn just how much you can save on these hard-working hay tools and get high performance at a low cost season after season. Offer ends October 26, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. See your John Deere dealer for qualifying products and complete details.
Hi, I'm Pam Fekencher, senior pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. St. John's invites you every Sunday to a joyful musical service of word and sacrament at 8:30 and 10 a.m. We're located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, listen live at 8:30 a.m. on AM 1080 KYMN or online at kymnradio.net. You are always welcome at St. John's. We hope to see you soon.
Well, thank you, Pastor. Nice message. 3 minutes before it is 10 o'clock on KIM Radio, almost 3 minutes to. As a matter of fact, as I'm talking, I can say it is exactly 3 minutes to 10 right now. Okay, my question was at the break, what instrument is the one that most kids, the highest number of applicants are capable of playing? And I'm going to write down what I think it is, and then you tell me. And I'll,
okay, he's covering his hand for me so I can't see it right now. This is fun.
Yeah.
Well, it could be any of the instruments that come out of the jazz band, because they have a little bit more of a popular music kind of appeal, and the students migrate to those. We don't get as many double reed instruments, for example, and things like that. We get a fair number of saxophones every year, and that's not surprising. They hear the sax on within the popular music that they're listening to, let alone jazz if they're following that. We get a decent number of trumpets. There's usually a good smattering of flute players. That's a very popular instrument, I think, primarily because it's small and it'll fit in a backpack. I mean, there are all sorts of odd little decisions that fifth graders make at the time, yeah, you know, when they get started, as opposed to someone who says, I'm going to play the tuba, yeah, or the string bass, and then they have to haul this thing around, you know. But it also sort of ebbs and flows, and we find that sometimes we have a much smaller number of flute players coming into audition, for example, and then other years we have so many we don't know what to do with them all.
Yeah. I wrote down clarinet.
I wish. Yeah. I mean, for the band, that's sort of the backbone of our, what might be our string section. You know, the clarinet choir. And sometimes we do get a pretty good crop of clarinets. In the St. Olaf Band, which is a full symphonic band, some of the listeners might have had experience with what we call a wind ensemble. And that's a smaller collection, typically around 40 to 50 players, one on a part, a little bit more of a orchestral wind section kind of thinking behind it. The big old symphonic band is sort of a dinosaur in some people's minds. I can always make a wind ensemble out of the St. Olaf Band. I can just say, okay, let's not have everybody play, and I can get that sound if I need to have that sound. But there's also a sound that we can make with 90 plus great musicians happening that a wind ensemble will never get. And so,
well, we are into a great conversation, and stick around. We're going to take a break for the news next. Our guest this morning is Dr. Timothy Marr, and he said I can call him Tim, and we'll come back and play that silly rendition of whatever it is, and then also I have a question, and you can think about this, and then give me the answer. I am under the impression that somebody from St. Olaf was in the band Chicago. Think about that, and maybe it's like, I don't know. This is your radio station. We are KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on the AM dial, 95.1 FM, The One.
Impeachment and flipping. I'm John Trout.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job.
President Trump, in an interview that aired this morning on Fox News, Fox and Friends, says he believes the economy would tank if he were to be impeached.
If I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash. I think everybody would be very poor.
Trump responding to a question over whether he believes Democrats would launch impeachment proceedings if they win the House this fall. Also from that same interview, our Bob Costantini observes,
President Trump on his relationship with Michael Cohen.
They always say the lawyer, and then they like to add the fixer. Well, I don't know if there's a fixer. I don't know where that term came from, but he's been a lawyer for me, didn't do big deals, did small deals, not somebody that was with me that much.
Cohen, for a time, served as vice president of the Trump Organization and is now subpoenaed by New York prosecutors who are investigating whether the Trump Foundation aided the Trump campaign, but is pleading guilty to two counts of campaign finance violations implicate Mr. Trump.
It's called flipping, and it almost ought to be illegal.
But the president tells Fox and Friends he understands why Cohen did it for a lighter sentence.
Lanny Davis, the lawyer for Michael Cohen, says his client has information on subjects that should be of interest to special counsel Robert Mueller beyond Cohen's allegations made while pleading guilty to campaign finance violations. Hawaii could see Hurricane Lane make landfall later today, marking the first major hurricane to hit the Aloha state in 26 years.
By Friday afternoon, a westerly shift, hopefully that pushes it away from areas around Honolulu. The cone still brings in Oahu into this, and certainly when you break down the model by model guidance, we do see a lot of variability in this. So certainly a lot can and will change with this forecast.
Meteorologist Padram Javahari, the Category 4 storm is blasting winds of 130 miles per hour and positioned now about 200 miles south of the Big Island. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 7 points. I'm John Trout.
Everybody, welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are the 195.1 FM, and I have in studio Dr. Timothy Marr. He is a professor of music at St. Olaf College in Northfield. He is the conductor of the St. Olaf Band, 90 in the band. How do you control 90 people, let alone 90 people with musical instruments? That's got to be very challenging.
Well, it depends on what age level you're talking about. If this were a middle school band, yes, that's a nightmare for most people to consider. At St. Olaf, it's an ensemble that's hard to get into, you know, with the audition process, and there's such a long-standing tradition of excellence and expectation that the new students are they're inculcated right away with, you know, the responsibilities, and you don't talk during rehearsal, and you practice and you work hard. The student leadership each year, senior band officers taking all the new members and having meetings at the beginning of the year, pass along this sense of duty and expectation and so on. And
Did you just say the senior officers?
Yeah.
Student officers?
Yeah.
Well, what is that?
We have a president and a vice president, a secretary and a treasurer. And
well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful way of handling this. The orchestra has a council. Norseman Band has Norse Council, they call it. It's fantastic. The students in any ensemble, even, you know, an athletic team, I would think, you know, you want them to have ownership for the experience, and if they can pass this down so it's not driven from the coach or the director or something like that, I think that's a stronger situation. And so that's what I've got going on. Plus, I think the biggest disciplinarian in my situation is the music. This is challenging, beautiful, heart-wrenching, exciting stuff, and it's really worth working hard on, and they respond to that challenge, and they understand that what they're doing collectively is so much bigger than what they could do individually, and this is a great thing to be involved with. I'm gonna, you know, toe the line and work hard.
And obviously, it's a distinct advantage when you have students that want to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I had a question for you, and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to resolve it. I have been under the impression that the band Chicago had a former St. Olaf's student in the band.
I tell you, if that had happened, I would have already, you know, plumbed the depths of the possibility of, you know, having that person come to campus and, you know, talk to our students and so on. I don't, I haven't heard that, and I've known the members of Chicago, not personally, but I know who they are, and they've, I don't have, I don't think they have any connection to St. Olaf. When I was teaching up at UMD, I had a colleague, Tom Wagren, on the composition piano faculty there, and he was the original keyboard player for Chicago.
Oh.
That was one of his, you know,
well, he would
claims
know
to
that.
Fame. Yeah.
Do you still stay in touch with him?
I haven't talked to Tom for quite some time, but he decided to go a little bit more seriously forward with his route through music, and he dropped out of the band before they hit big.
Oh,
and I'm,
wow.
You know, he would always sort of put on a face like, well, that's just fine. But I thought inside he realized that he just lost out on $1 million or whatever, you know.
Do you have visiting musicians, conductors, directors?
Yes, yes. This is an important part of the educational experience to have a guest composer write a piece for us, come work with us, different soloists on various instruments will come join the ensemble. The orchestra is going to go perform at the Carnegie Hall.
Ooh.
This coming February.
Are you jealous?
No, we were there.
Oh.
I guess I'm jealous. I'd go there every year.
Yeah.
But it's an absolutely unbelievably amazing experience. But the orchestra hasn't been there yet. The choir's been there a number of times, and the band on our 125th anniversary back in 2016 were able to have an appearance there. And it's the orchestra's turn. Steve Amundson is getting close to retirement age, and he's been there much longer than I am, 35 years plus, 37 maybe, something like that. And it's such an incredible orchestra. They deserve this. They should be there. And they have Sarah Chang soloing with them, who's a world-class violinist. And what these guest artists do by way of motivation and inspiration for the students is pretty remarkable.
Now, describe to me, Carnegie, people say Carnegie, some say Carnegie. Mm-hmm. What do you say?
Carnegie Hall is what the lay person typically would say.
That's what that library is, Carnegie, to
me.
So it's been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a milestone in any performer's life, whether it's a comedian or orchestra.
Sure.
And what does it physically look like from behind the scenes? And how many people are seated in Carnegie Hall? I think Johnny Western from Northfield here.
Mm. I know that name.
You
yes.
know the name?
Yeah.
I think he performed there.
Oh, wow.
But what is it physically like? I mean,
it's
90 people backstage, you know?
Yeah, it's a little cramped backstage as you're waiting to get out. Nowadays they have TV monitors up and so on, so you can see what's going out in the hall and all of that. It's a sort of a cream-colored kind of look up on stage, sort of off-white, opulent kind of look, red velvet with the seats, a couple of tiers ringing the outer hall. And we had a little over 1,000 people there when we performed, and it was maybe the main floor in the first tier, and there were tiers above that, so we didn't sell out. It's hard for a college group to go that distance and, you know, sell out a hall like that. The acoustic is unbelievable. It's everything that you are led to believe, you know, the sound in there is something that's just delicious.
And what do you think is attributed to that?
The older concert halls, it's an acoustical, you know, consideration. The older concert halls typically have a more ornate kind of structuring about them, fancier woodwork and things along these lines, the wood in the materials itself, and they tend to take the direct line of the sound that's coming out and bounce them around the space in a little bit more of a pleasing and reverberant way. Some concert halls are built to sustain theater productions, and so if you want to hear the spoken word, they need to be drier so that the echo doesn't ruin the chance to really hear what's being said. And we have way too many halls that are multi-purpose. And so the hall that we had up at the University of Minnesota Duluth was like this. It was really good for the theater department. It was not very good for the music making because it was too dry in parlance. Whereas Carnegie Hall, by and large, was built on the old European models of a music hall. So that's what it has going for it.
Is there a place you can stand and have a picture taken that shows you were at Carnegie Hall?
Well, I'm sure you could pay the proper amount of money to make that happen. No, I don't think they let anybody just walk in off the street.
I mean, you, when you're there performing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had a professional photographer come in and took full advantage of having the band up on stage. We did our dress rehearsal in concert black. Our uniform, so that we could take some photos that we're still using this day as press photos and things like this.
And it has to be a thrill for somebody who graduates from St. Olaf and maybe puts their instrument away in mm-hmm. a cocktail conversation. Oh, I performed at Carnegie Hall.
Exactly. And what's even more heartwarming for me is talking to the parents of these students. We had, out of the 90 students, maybe 40 of them had their folks show up, you know, in New York. They made a big deal out of the trip because their kid was playing at Carnegie Hall, you know.
Yeah.
And to talk to the mom and the dad and sense the pride that they had that this was happening for their son or daughter was really fantastic.
Does New York City have any benefactors for St. Olaf, businessmen, businesswomen that don't miss it?
Yeah, we're very fortunate in that we have a number of alums who are out there in all sorts of industry and business. And they were notified and encouraged, you know, to come support this event. And they were either there in person or they helped out financially in some fashion.
How long ago was that appearance?
That was in 2016.
Okay. Did any of those alum come up and say, "Hello, Professor, remember me?" And you look and you go, I was first clarinet.
Oh, yes, yes. We had a fantastic reception at a restaurant right across the street from Carnegie Hall, and that's when that happened. And we had band alums in particular coming up from my time here and before. I've had a chance seeing how I went to school from 74 to 78. I didn't make it into the St. Olaf band my first year, so I was only in the St. Olaf band for 3 years. And so I have that set of friends, and then Mighty Johnson was really pretty good in having me come back as a guest conductor, guest composer. So I've known people throughout the time between my leaving the campus and coming back teaching, and these are good friends.
Isn't there, in that world that you live and work in, I'm trying to think of the name of it, but isn't there like some political part of that particular livelihood where they judge individuals based on what's being done, and there's sometimes a little nitpicking going on and getting what do you get, like a special you're a doctor, for example, mm-hmm. but is there some other kind of name that they give somebody that's really good and you have to pass tests? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I think I'm following you a little bit. It's a highly competitive field as a performer and as a conductor, as a composer and so on. We all struggle for recognition, and the whole route to getting a doctorate is just a series of hoops that you have to jump through, you know, to pass this oral exam, write this dissertation or essay or whatever. It's a long series of goals that you have to set for yourself, pass them, and in the process gain this level of expertise. They you know, you hear that if somebody does anything for 10,000 hours, if they work on it for 10,000 hours, then they're an expert at it. And if someone at my age looks back on my career, yeah, that probably makes sense. You know, I'd have to do the math on it, but I would think
you
I'm well over
more
10.
Than, yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing. And I remember talking to Miles Johnson, my predecessor, right before he was getting ready to retire, and he said, you know, I'm finally thinking that I understand this.
Oh, wow.
You know, and at the time I sort of understood what he was getting at, because there's just an overwhelming amount of things that you need to know to be an expert at whatever field you're in, and it takes a lifetime of study and experience to feel that you maybe understand it.
It seems to me, for, and I don't know why, but for some reason I was on the campus one time during a, I want to say vetting, but that isn't the word, and I could sense that there was somebody there lecturing and how to do it right. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say, but I don't have the words for it. But I could tell that there were people in the industry that are like, you know, the leaders, and they mm-hmm. are the ones that make decisions on what happens with this and with that. And
well, the whole notion of assessment is a very challenging thing.
Yeah.
And no matter what you're trying to understand, can I confront it and take it all in so that I can make a really accurate assessment as to its level of quality. It's matched to what we're doing here. It might be that they were talking about how to decide which faculty person to hire. You know, you have an opening at a campus like St. Olaf College. It's a rather prestigious operation up on the hill there, and you'll have hundreds of applicants. And you only get to pick one. And so what's that process? How do you comb through all of these applicants, with so many of them being, you know, virtually overqualified? You know, they're all really, really good. And we need to always be looking for the one that seems to be the best fit. They will come in and assimilate to a certain point, understand the heritage and the traditions of the place, yet supply their unique vision for how to move forward. We need that new blood, that new, you know, sense of you don't always want to keep doing it the same way. You've got to have other people helping understand what's changing in the world, and it's a time-consuming, really important process on any campus to figure out who the next English prof should be, mm-hmm. for example.
Now, you're tenured.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you have been here almost 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You got to feel proud about that.
Certainly.
And you look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And one of the things I wondered is, do you get involved in selecting leaders of any other group at St. Olaf, the choir, the chorus, the Vikings, the
mm-hmm. Within any faculty, you're asked to serve on the search committee.
Okay.
And we're sometimes a music professor, for example, will be put on the search committee for an administrator as well. We need a new president, a new dean, something like this. They value the input and insight that a well-trained person can provide in that experience. I was just on the search committee last year. We have a new Norseman band, low brass professor on campus, Art Hecker, and we're really excited that he's coming here. He's another University of Iowa trombone player,
right,
just like me. So how could we improve on that at all? You know, and
no bias in the selection.
None. But this is basically Paul Nemestow's position. After Paul retired, it took us a couple years to get the okay to search for a replacement. There were a couple of faculty members on the search committee with me and the chair of the department. And, you know, each of the finalists, they meet with the deans. They go through the whole, you know, two-day affair of interview and audition. They perform on their instrument, they conduct the ensemble. We're watching the students interact with the teachers. How, you know, does it look like it's working well, or is there a friction here? And then you make the decision collectively. It ultimately goes up to the president and the board of regents to make the final decision on things based on suggestions. And with this whole notion of tenure, you're talking about someone who may stay there the rest of their teaching career.
It's 22 minutes after 10 o'clock, and I thank you for that input. I'm going to take a brief break, and when we come back, would you, if you need to write it down, I'll give you a pen and paper. How many bands, orchestras, choirs, choruses, jazz clubs, or whatever, how many groups of music, both voice and instrumental, are there on that campus? We'll be right back. Hopefully, you'll have the answer. You're listening to KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
It's at 24 past 10 on KYMN. A little bit windy out there, but plenty of sunshine, but no rain, and that's good. We're enjoying life here this summer of 2018. And the question I posed to Dr. Tim was, how many instrumental groups and how many vocal groups are there on the St. Olaf campus?
I would start by saying that we hear the figure that we have almost 1,000 students taking lessons as part of their instruction.
Out of 2,800?
Yeah, about 3,000 students. Yeah. So roughly one out of every three students up on that campus, if you see them walking across the commons, they should probably be in a practice room practicing instead, you know. It's a wonderfully supportive atmosphere up there for the arts and for music making, and more specifically, we've got two concert bands, we've got two full orchestras, which is unheard of at a school of our size. They're lucky if they would put together a chamber orchestra.
Okay, I have questions.
Mm-hmm.
Two concert bands. What is that?
What that means is sort of like the St. Olaf band, a big 80 or 90 piece band. When after Paul Nemestow retired, I took over Norseman Band for a couple of years, so I had both the bands. And
what's yours called?
The St. Olaf Band.
Okay.
That's the one that I conduct regularly, but I also took over the Norseman Band for a couple
How
of years.
How many are in the Norseman?
We started in the upper 60s. We ended in the mid-80s over the two years.
And do they switch and play in both?
Nope. Completely separate.
Well, is there one that has a higher level than the other?
Yeah. The St. Olaf Band, the St. Olaf Orchestra, the St. Olaf Choir are what we call the ambassador groups.
Okay.
That's the term we're using now. And they're the ones that are able to go out on extended tours every year.
Okay.
And the others go out on little weekend tours. on an alternating basis.
So that's two.
Yep, two full orchestras, and what I mean by that is that it's the strings with the full winds and percussion, with virtually no doubling between the two. We do have some people who are, we call them slashies, because they're in the band slash orchestra, they're in the winds and the percussion section. There are three bell choirs, and I say this because my wife, Jill Marr, is the director of the bell program, handbell program up on the campus. And so she's got two that she conducts and one that is student-led under her supervision. There are three jazz bands.
Let's back up to the bells, okay?
You bet.
Okay.
I was hoping you'd pick up on that.
Okay. The bell, you say. That was funny. You know, excuse me. I'm patting myself on the back for being witty. Dim witty. The deal is, when it comes to bells, I see them mostly in a church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I may have seen them somewhere on a more of a professional level. They may have been amateurs, but, you know, mm-hmm. not in a church. So how many bells are there? And why do kids take that course? And do they anticipate joining a church and getting in the bell? And are there a lot of people fighting for that position? There you go.
Yeah. First of all, you should have my wife on this show.
I will.
And she can talk about that more specifically. But she usually has about 13 people in a bell choir. And they have bell choirs that are the smallest or maybe two octave bell choirs, you know, an octave is like a
I can sing a half an octave.
Yeah, there you go. All the way up to five octaves, and it's competitive by audition to get into the top group. She takes them out on a tour. They've been featured on the Christmas festival that we have up on campus, and it's a fantastic sound. They have the listeners should understand that these are bells that are held in the hands, and they sort of ring them in the air.
You're using two hands.
Yeah, they some of them do four bells, two in each hand, and it depends on how they twist their wrist as to which one will sound. It's way beyond what I could do. And some of the bells are massive, and they're heavy. The bass bells, and they probably, you know, can hurt a guy's wrist if they're snapping them too hard, you know. But it's a wonderful sound, and it's a very different way of making music, because in my band, if we want a melody played, and a single instrument can play all the notes of the melody. If you want a melody played on the handbell choir, you have to get eight people lined up, and they all get to play one or two notes within the melody.
Well, boy, I'm just thinking of so many things to ask you, and let me say this first. When you said melody, the first time I went to the tuba deal on campus on Christmas, I was amazed that they carried a melody with tubas. I'm going, wow, how do they do that? You know, I'm the old oompa, oompa, That's so this is similar to bells in regards to the fact that they can do a melody.
Mm-hmm.
So would Carol of the Bells be a good example of people saying, oh, that's what that's about?
I'm sure that that's existing in a bell choir arrangement somewhere. You know, hark, call the bells, sweet silver bells. You know, you hear it being played with the bells. There are commercials on TV with the little Hershey Kisses.
Yeah.
That's the handbells. You know, that's that sound. And, you know, it's visually engaging to watch them. You know, they have to become of one mind in order to understand that you can imagine the challenge of playing a melody. Now, can you have it rise and fall with a dynamic crescendo and decrescendo, and you only get to play two notes within that melody? So you have to be listening to what's being handed off to you, and then you, strike your bells with a certain amount of dynamics so that it lifts the crescendo to the person you're handing it off to. My wife Jill has them do all sorts of interesting games with cups and passing balls around and things like that so that they can work on that kind of coordination. It's a physical coordination.
And does she wear gloves?
They do wear gloves.
No, those are very expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pricey. It's not like paying $14,000 for a flute or something like that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. They're At the upper end of any music making, the instruments are pricey. It's just like anything else in this world. I know that she's done some fundraising. She also does the bell choirs at Bethel Lutheran Church. Does the youth program for the bell choir there. And they just did a fundraising campaign recently to add a couple octaves and new bells and so on. So you're talking thousands of dollars to make this happen.
Okay, so now we got next on your list.
Three jazz bands with Dave Hagedorn at the head of that program. Back in 2011, the top jazz band won the Downbeat Award, which the Downbeat magazine is the big jazz magazine, and they pick one collegiate jazz group a year as being the best. And St. Olaf College.
Wow.
St. Olaf College got that.
Now, is that a crossover? Are your people in your band in the jazz group?
Yep.
Is that like an independent, I want to do it?
Yeah, we have some that are only in the jazz band as well.
Okay. You know, so it's a credit course.
No, surprisingly, well, yes and no. They are given zero credit.
Okay. But a lot of applause.
Yes. Well, no, and this was sort of an initiative to have them get zero credit, and that means it'll show up on their transcript that they were in these groups. Before that, it was just sort of a extracurricular kind of thing. Nowhere on your official transcript would it say that you were a member of the orchestra or the band or the choir or something like this. And so now it will.
In that jazz unit, how many per unit approximately?
Standard jazz band of 4 to 5 trumpets, 4 trombones, 5 saxes, a rhythm section.
Xylophone?
If they're playing music that calls for it, they would have percussionists that could play the mallet instruments.
I asked somebody once, and we were talking music, and I brought up the name George Shearing, and they never had heard of him. Have you?
Yeah, that's before my time, but I know what you're talking about.
He was one of the greatest.
Sure.
He popularized it as being an individual instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get one when you're a little kid, you know, and you think you can do that. It looks so easy, and you got two of those little hitters, or what do you call
them? Yeah, the mallets.
And it isn't easy at all. What do you have after the jazz bands?
Then I wrote down many chamber groups, and what we're talking about here are string quartets, saxophone quartets, woodwind quintets, brass quintets, brass choirs, trombone choir, tuba euphonium ensemble, percussion ensemble. It goes on and on and on. And some of these are being done for credit. Some of them are just people wanting to get together. We have lots of jazz combos coming out of those jazz bands. And then we have the chamber music going on with people singing with piano accompaniment and giving recitals like that. We have a rather unusual thing in that the organists have gone on tour and the pianists have gone on tour. They put together a program with 8 piano players, and it'll be like an all-Russian composer program. And then
on tour with 8 pianos?
Well, they will use the host piano at whatever site. Yeah, good point. But it's sort of fun to see that those majors within our department also have the opportunity to get out on tour. What happens on tour is twofold. I've always felt that it gives us a chance to go deeper and deeper into the piece with each performance. It's sort of like an onion. You take a layer off an onion, and you keep getting down to the core. And a work of art has around it all sorts of obfuscation, all sorts of barriers to understanding, you know, and you have to spend time with it. You have to study it, you know, and then you go, I see, I hear, I understand. And when we can go on tour and play the same program every night, by the time we get to our home concert at the end, I notice that people are hardly looking at their music. They're watching me almost all the time. They know their music that well. And collectively, we're so much deeper into that piece than even when we started the tour 10 days earlier. you know. And well, so
that's the way it is on stage as an actor in plays.
Yes.
The last performance is your best, and you wish, well, now I really get it.
Exactly. that's the main trouble we have with music departments in general, is that we only give the concert once. We only have access to the performing space for one shot. The theater people figured this out a long time ago, and I think it's because they build sets and they really invest into the space, and audiences want to see their productions. But they'll run a show 3 weekends in a row or something like this. Can you imagine having our concerts offered that often?
Well, yes.
Yeah, I can too, but yeah. What we do is we do that by going out on tour.
Meet people that are musically inclined outside of Northfield, for example. Oh, you're from Northfield, yeah? And wow, you're really lucky. You get to go up to the St. Olaf campus, Carleton campus, take mm-hmm. in the chamber music, take in this and take in. And I feel kind of embarrassed because I don't as often as I would like to.
That's very normal.
And I think it would be so much fun to go up to, let's say, you mm-hmm. and your performance and know whether it was all right, okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
And I won't know that. I'll know I liked it or mm-hmm. didn't understand it, but it's just people that know music can enjoy it so much more than people that are just enjoying the music. You know what I mean?
I do, and I think you're touching on an interesting point. First of all, those that just have sort of a surface-level engagement with it, that's fantastic. I mean, if it makes them tap their toe, if it makes them change their mood, that's the power of music, and any musician believes in that, that we want to express ourselves, whether it's an improvised, on-the-spot jazz solo that we're just making up right now, or it's recreating a composer's challenging score. We want that sound as it's traveling into your eardrum and going up into your brain and moving your soul. We want that reaction. And if you can understand it at a deeper level, then it becomes perhaps a stronger experience. I would caution people about this a little bit, because sometimes I am listening at a level of critique, a critical level, that keeps me from just enjoying it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm judging it. I go out and I'm an adjudicator. You know, I have a chance to go out to New York once a year and either judge a national contest that's either at Carnegie Hall or at Lincoln Center. And so I get to sit in these spaces and hear fine groups, and I'm talking into a microphone and writing comment and so on. That's very different than just sitting and listening to the piece. And what I tell my students, after their rehearsals and so on, that the highest compliment that I could pay you, or that anyone could pay me, is that say we were doing a piece by Gustav Holst or something like this, a great British composer, that somebody in the audience would come say that you just let me commune with Gustav Holst, that the band, the conductor, you cease to exist. It's just the music that I'm listening to. It has no personality involved with it or anything like that. Or if you go to hear a fine singer singing a Schubert aria or something like this, that you go right to the music, and it's not about what dress the singer's wearing or what their voice sounds like or anything like that. Can you go directly to the art itself?
And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Our guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Dr. Tim Marr. He is the conductor of the St. Olaf Band And I have some more questions.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25 plus employees and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service.
Remember Leo South in Lakeville. We sell fun.
Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Portable one, the one you want.
For your next haircut, here's a thought. Try Family Hair of Northfield. They're locally owned and operated. Family Hair offers friendly service at a great price. Located just across the parking lot from Just Food, Family Hair does cuts, perms, coloring, everything hair. No appointment is needed. Just walk right in. Christy, Megan, and their staff are great at what they do at prices you can't beat. If you have younger kids, they'll love the special kids seat with their choice of movies to watch while they get their hair cut. Visit Family Hair of Northfield.
I had some more questions here for my good guest here this morning, Dr. Timothy Marr, conductor of the St. Louis Band. Okay, now I'm going to give you a couple of terrible things here, and you can tell me behind it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Da 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 da.
This is brings back memories of seniors running from their graduation seats at St. Olaf College and forming a kick line behind the me and in front of the St. Olaf band. This has been going on for over 20 years now, and it's part of the Stars and Stripes Forever. And that's the last thing that we play at the end of the commencement, and. Somehow this started up, and it's been going on ever since. And it's a four-minute piece, and they've been hot under the sun, and they come running down, they start doing this kick line.
These are senior band members.
Yeah, they've graduated. They're not playing in the band because they're
right.
And they start doing this kick line, and you know, you can do that for 30 seconds, and it doesn't hurt. This is a four-minute piece.
Yeah.
It's an aerobic exercise, and they're wearing a gown, and it's 90 degrees out. It's just hilarious.
Fall down and for breath and all that?
No, they're so jacked up with adrenaline at that point in time that they could probably go forever.
And are the juniors, do they really want to play well? Because the seniors are the ones that were there for 4 or 3 years.
Yeah. Now it's their turn.
Yep.
And I enjoy that as well, because when the seniors leave the ensemble, then I can hear the core of next year's group.
Okay. How about I'm trying to da 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 da.
Oh, that's one of the pieces that I really don't like.
Okay. Tell us why.
That's Pomp and Circumstance, number one. I think he's got like four marches. I think that's number one. That's because I'm a band director, and I've had to conduct that thing at commencements from my 1978 on. When I get to my last year at St. Olaf, I've joked with the band about this many times, I'm going to take it so fast. I'm going to make them all run. Yeah, what'll they do? Fire me? You know. But when we rehearse it, you know, la di da di da 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 di da 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 da. I start going in cut time. The band's all looking at me like, "What's wrong with this guy?" But it's easy music for a band at that level. So we just blitz it as fast as we can, and then we play it with a nice stately, appropriate feel when we're supposed to. But not my last year.
All right. I'll have to remember that. Now, this is going to be silly, but maybe you can help me out.
You'd have to do that one
again.
Sounds like something out of a polka.
It's a Boomer Shave. No, it's a shave and a haircut. Two bits.
Well, yeah, I can understand. Now that you put the words to it, so your pitch improved.
Yeah, my pitch improved? Yes. Okay, pitch. What is pitch, by the way? You watch, I'm sure that maybe you don't, but I enjoyed The Voice, and I enjoy American Idol. I enjoy it. They talk about pitch.
Yeah, you're a little pitchy.
Yeah, what what does that mean?
Well, you're a little flat or you're a little sharp from where you truly need to be with where you're placing your tone.
When I was working with the NAG Theater, Donna Paulson.
Ah, my old piano teacher.
Hey, yeah, she was the one, and she'd call me in for a rehearsal after, and I just have a tough time. I can sound good for a note, maybe, but then I'm all over the place. But it's fun. I mean, there's so much more to it than I know, and so many people know. All we know is we like that music. We like that music. I want to play the silly walk thing. And
sure.
Can you reintroduce it, and we'll play it?
Yeah, this is the last movement of Scenes from a Life Dance. That's a piece that's written in memory of my niece, Katie Marr, Katie Elizabeth Marr, and she passed away at the age of 20. And at the end of this, you're going to hear a sort of a strident chord that just sounds 20 times, once for each year of her life, and it ends quietly with a little bit of a piano piece that I wrote for her when she was in seventh grade or so. And so that was the end of the piece right there. And all the energy of the silly walk was celebrating her life. She lost a mental health battle, basically. And then the end of it is the farewell. And you hear, go tell it on the mountain. You know, that was one of her favorite hymns.
That's it.
Yep, you know, and it's just a way of saying goodbye.
Now, did the, and if this is too personal, tell me, but played on a CD in the church at the end of the funeral?
No, it was written after she had passed away.
Oh, after, okay.
Yeah, I had a commission for Lawrence University, and she died when she was a student there. And Andy Mast, a good friend of mine, is the director there, and I had already started one piece, and he knew that this had happened then. You know, it was campus news, and he said, do you need some time? And I said, yeah, it would be great if I didn't have to, you know, write a piece right now. And then we talked about, well, maybe this could be a piece that could involve their dance troupe at the campus she was involved with. And so then it became this dance suite. And life is really strange, you know. This beautiful young life, we lost Katie, but because of this, her... there's a effort down in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where she grew up called Katie's Table, and it's an effort to get counselors involved with youth who are struggling. And my brother, Todd, is a doctor at the Gunderson Clinic in La Crosse, and his wife, Deb, are both mental health experts now, basically, and they've got a whole... new building as part of the hospital that's for mental health, and it sort of started with this rather unbelievably tragic event in our Mar family life. Mm-hmm. and a lot of good is now happening.
Well, now your mom and dad have to be proud of their kids.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What does John Philip Sousa have to do with you?
Oh, I think that... he's an important person for a number of reasons. I particularly enjoy his marches. I think that I value knowing about what he did for bands in this nation, in the world for that matter. He had an incredibly high professional standard. Musicians were leaving some of the top orchestras to be in his band because basically they'd make more money, you know. He just had an incredible impact on the listening that was going on across the nation. This was at the very start of the phonograph records. He recorded some of the first first recordings.
And tubes.
Yeah, wax cylinders and so on, you know, and you can see pictures of, you know, like 14 members of the Sousa band in a recording studio, all aimed at sort of a megaphone in front of the microphone, and they were playing Sousa marches and making this connection happen. And you can imagine being in Northfield, for example, and even though our band goes back to 1891, you know, it's a rare occurrence to have live music happen like that. And his programming involved transcriptions of some of the great orchestral works, and some of the most recent orchestral hits of their day would get arranged for band, and people would hear them in the band version long before they would hear them in the original orchestral version.
What would be his most recognizable?
Oh, Stars and Stripes Forever.
Okay.
By far and away.
I believe that he was hired when they dedicated the Fauché Tower.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
There's a very interesting story about a march that he wrote called...
Can you wait on that story? We'll take a break, and then we'll come back and get that story. We're with Dr. Tim here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. We'll be back in a flash.
Firehouse Liquor, your family-owned and operated liquor store in Dundas. We have the largest selection in southern Minnesota, open daily from 8 to 10 p.m. for all your refreshments. We offer 15% case wine discounts, and for the seniors, we have discounts every day. It's Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Hay season is save season at John Deere. For a limited time, enjoy extra savings on select John Deere mower conditioners and round bushers. Pay a visit to your local John Deere dealer to learn just how much you can save on these hard-working hay tools. And get high performance at a low cost season after season. Offer ends October 26, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. See your John Deere dealer for qualifying products and complete details.
We're back. I apologize to our John Deere friends in the Firehouse Liquor Store. We were talking with the mics on because we're both wearing headphones, so we didn't hear the monitor. Anyhow, what were we had a story. Oh, John Philip Sousa, yeah. His most popular.
Yeah, he was asked in about 1929 to write a piece for the Fauché Tower, which was the tallest building this side of the Mississippi until the West Coast at the time. And it was premiered, and then the scandal involving Fauché with money handling and so on erupted. John Philip Sousa didn't want his name associated with that at all. And so that march got withdrawn after the premiere and basically hidden under the bed. And they found this march probably about 20 years ago now. And it was like this, everybody knew about this march, but it was never played again. And they have since brought it out in a modern edition. I've done it a number of times. It's a good march. It was written...
What's it called?
Fauché Tower Washington Memorial March.
Wow.
Because the Fauché Tower looks like the Washington Memorial.
Right.
You know, and it's a sturdy themes, and it's from later in Sousa's career, 3 years before he passed, probably. And he was at the height of his music making. And we're glad that it's out now.
Did you see it before you heard it?
The tower or the
march you're talking about, the Fauché Tower?
No, I heard a recording of a performance of it, and then I searched it out and got it.
Okay, when you saw it, what came to mind right away?
When I saw the score, I knew that we were going to do this because, first of all, it's like undiscovered Sousa.
You know,
it's sort of fun in that regard, and it was a good piece of music. And it had this strong Minnesota connection, so it made great sense.
Was there one particular section that you said, wow, that was a good arrangement?
No, the whole thing.
Okay.
The whole thing, yeah.
All right. We're 2 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and obviously, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're not going to get done in 2 hours, and I will invite you to come back at your convenience. And then I'll start with where were you born, who's mom and dad, and grandpa, and your tour through St. Olaf, and all of the things that led up to your coming here. In what year, 19?
Started in the fall of 94 as a teacher.
1994,
yeah.
Okay. And you graduated in 78.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Was that a pretty good feeling that, hey, man,
oh, yes.
That the school I went to, now I am part of it.
Yeah, yeah. I can talk a long time about what that feels like.
Well, I went to Brown Institute, which was a broadcasting place for many years, and it got into corporate ownership, and now it's no longer around. So I just say I went to Brown. And in this town, you think, oh, really? Point. I was asked to lecture there and also put on the board of directors. And that is probably one of my most proud feelings, was being invited by my alma mater to lecture.
Yep.
So you had that feeling too.
Yeah, it's a great feeling.
Yep. And maybe perhaps your wife's name is?
Jill.
And mm-hmm. How many children, if any?
We have 2 children.
One of each?
Yep. One of each. No, I've got Jenna and Hannah.
Two girls.
Two girls.
And
yeah.
Are they out of high school?
Yeah, Jenna lives up in the city. She's a professional photographer, and Hannah's going to be a junior at Gustavus. Oh. Jenna right now is just getting out of wisdom teeth surgery, and Hannah goes in tomorrow.
Yeah, my wife's going to go through that. I was going to ask you about that. Concordia, Gustavus. I mean, that's... a rivalry, I would assume.
Yeah, we are friendly about it. I have a former student who's the director of the band at Gustavus. You know, I mean, it's a wonderful situation, and I couldn't be happier with the education my daughter's getting at Gustavus, for example.
Has there ever been? Oh, we got to get out of here. But has there ever been a gathering of some of the MIAC schools, where Concordia and Gustavus and Luther and St. Olaf, maybe even Carleton, all get together in a mass presentation?
They used to have some special event up at Ordway with Luther and Concordia and St. Olaf bands.
Norwegian Heritage.
Yeah.
And who was the guy that directed building that place?
The Ordway?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
From Northfield. Carleton grad. Just passed away a couple of years ago. Dixon Bond.
Oh, I know that name. I had no idea it was tied with that, though.
Yeah. He was the project manager on that.
Wow.
Yeah. I got a nice tour of it just before it opened. It was wonderful. You played there?
Yes. I've conducted there.
Acoustics?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. I'm a St. Paulite. You just lost my appreciation. I want to thank you very much for joining us here this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN from Northfield, Minnesota. We are a friend you can count on, 1080 AM dial, streaming at kymnradio.net. So when you're on your tour, you can tune in and get the home news as it happens. And once again, excellent. Dr. Timothy Maher, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this.
95.1.
The One.